Let's get David Eicholt in here, HawkeyeInsider.com, 24/7 Sports. Not that I wouldn't trade places with 30-something.
That would be nice.
Yeah.
Well, and Eicholt hasn't even hit that. 29,
are you
is that
still, right? You're not 30 yet, David? Wow.
No, I turned 29 in a couple months.
Wow. Good for you. Got the world in front of you, my yes. friend. Good to talk to you. All right, so a lot of ground to cover with you. We appreciate coming on. Want to do men, want to do the women, obviously. Football, lots going on with the University of Iowa. But let's start with the latest, and that's the championship game that all came to an end on Sunday afternoon. Boy, when it comes down to it, David, and you were there, South Carolina's just, they're yeah. just at a different level, aren't they?
No, they are. I mean, that's got to be one of the best teams that's ever been put together, women's college basketball. I know all the UConn teams are tremendous. I mean, even last year's South Carolina team. But they lose all five starters. And people can say what they want about how many five stars they have on the roster. They still have to make it work. And it's very clear that Dawn Staley has instilled a culture and a value system there that just works for that group. I mean, you talked about trying to get Camila Cardoso in foul trouble. Well, guess what? They got two or three other posts that can come in and produce similar results. I mean, at the end of the day, South Carolina was an absolute machine. They were very well put together. Iowa, if they play 100 times, maybe Iowa wins, you know, 10 to 12 of the time. And I still thought they put together quite a fight. But yeah, I think you just need to tip your cap off to South Carolina and what they did. Unquestionably the best team in the country this year.
No doubt about it. It ends in another championship game. They played as long as possible for back-to-back seasons. And I think we'll look back and yes, there'll always be the disappointment of not getting a national championship, but this run that this team has put us on and what Caitlin Clark certainly over these last 2 years has done, I mean, this is rarefied air for Iowa athletics. I know wrestling and the championships there, but we're talking very, very much a niche sport in comparison to even what women's college basketball is. When you look back and you look back at the legacy of this squad and Caitlin Clark, and you look back at these 4 years, what are going to be your lasting memories?
I think, number one, you can't talk about the history of women's college basketball without the Iowa Hawkeyes now.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can say whatever you want about Iowa not being able to finish the job, but what Caitlin's done, and I don't care anymore, I'm going to fly out and say it, don't give me this championship or bust when it comes to the greatest of all time mm-hmm. conversations. Caitlin Clark's the best college basketball player that's ever walked the earth. What she's been able to do, and for her to not, I feel like getting not enough credit for what she's been able to do, it's incredible. In terms of they beat South Carolina last year, and there were segments about how the tournament should be canceled because South Carolina was so great last year. Caitlin Clark and I were able to beat them. Iowa being able to defeat Kim Mulkey and Gino Auriemma in back-to-back games, really, get back to a national title. And then, of course, Dawn Staley, who's turned South Carolina into a blue blood at this point. I just think it's the overall impact that not just they made on Iowa, but they made on the sport as a whole. I mean, they made it must-watch TV. Mm-hmm. 18 million people watched. 24 million people watched Caitlin Clark's final game. I think you look at the stories of, you know, Hannah Stolke playing out of position, what she's been able to do, being that pure five, she'll be a four next year. Kate Martin probably goes down as one of the best leaders in Iowa athletics history, certainly Iowa women's basketball history. You know, how a community embraced Molly Davis getting on the court for the final 20 mm-hmm. seconds. Sydney Falter stepping up now is, you know, going to be a focal point next season, what she's been able to do. It really is, there's so many compelling storylines with this team, but I think above all else, the way they've been able to not shy away from controversy when, you know, when criticism would hit them, the way they embraced new fans, the way they tried to pave the way for the future generation while honoring former legends. Like, there's no such thing as a team that does everything right or people that do everything right. This group of women and the staff, I think they've been about as flawless as they come in terms of being able to embrace their role in growing the women's college basketball game. Yes, the championship would have been nice, and I think they were clearly disappointed they weren't able to get it. But I also think they have the perspective and they have the understanding that what they've done for the game, it's bigger than championships.
I don't remember which writer or former writer of the Omaha World Herald tweeted something, I'm paraphrasing, that You know, upon further review, it seems like Caitlin Clark is going to have to win two championships before she's, you know, anointed as the greatest, because one won't be enough. And obviously he's, you know, he's poking fun at some of the stars that have come before Caitlin Clark that are going out of their way to, you know, set that bar at an unreachable place. But she did, and it's, here's my takeaway. I got two. What she meant to little boys and little girls filling arenas around the Big Ten footprint and wherever she went, and not just her, the whole team, because, you know, Kate Martin signed a bunch of autographs, so did Gabby Marshall, I'm guessing Stalky as well. But how she affected boys and girls who will come after her. And then maybe as important as anything, how the team, the coaching staff and the team, was able to keep the outside outside. You know, they, all that noise mm-hmm. that was coming their way, it didn't seem to affect them at all. They were successful in, you know, keeping that volume as low as it possibly could be in an era with social media that, quite honestly, is incredibly hard to do.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. And I think the way that – I think you need to tip your cap to Lisa Bluter and staff for creating a culture to really understand that pressure is a privilege. And how about – I know we always talk about Caitlin Clark, rightfully so, but how about Caitlin Clark being able to embrace everything? Because there is nobody that has had more pressure on them in college athletics over the past year than Caitlin Clark.
Yeah, for sure.
Without question. Yep. And for her to continue to answer the same questions from national media, from local media, time after time with a big smile on her face, staying after games, signing as many autographs as she can. I mean, after they won the Big Ten tournament, she was out on the court for about 75 to 80 minutes. Seriously, just signing autographs. She understands her impact. And to be 22 years old and to really just understand that she is going to pave the way. She is going to be a global sports icon at this point, if she is not already. For her to understand that and to not have an ego about it, I think you need to give a lot of credit to Lisa Bluter, give a lot of credit to her parents and the staff and the friendships that are all around her to keep her grounded. And I think you also need to give credit to the Iowa women's team, because how many of them could have been on a team where, you know, they aren't happy, they're not getting recognition because right. all the attention's on Caitlin Clark. For Lisa Bluter to establish a culture where there's no drama, there's no toxicity behind the scenes, there's people that are very, very happy for Caitlin. And when you think about this too, and this is something Caitlin doesn't get credit for, she does not like talking about herself. Mm-hmm. She really doesn't. She understands she has to, but she tries to give shout outs to everybody on the team. She tries to shine a light on everybody. And I think that's also helped her in credibility in that locker room. But you're exactly right. I mean, for them to handle everything the way they have, it really is compelling, and I think it's very admirable.
So we look towards the future, and the future without Caitlin Clark and Gabby Marshall and Kate Martin and Sharon Goodman and on and on and on. It is going to be another look. They need a point guard. They don't have one on the roster. Kenenna Johnson got hurt. Incoming Guyton, she's also injured with an ACL. They need a point guard. Lucy Olson is the hot name out there, the third leading scorer in the country.
Where's
a year
she from?
Ago from Villanova. 5'9" guard, and well, she took over some pretty big shoes herself, and Segrist taking over for her, yep. who was the third pick in the WNBA a year ago. Jeez. What is the reality there with Lucy Olson and a connection to Iowa?
Yeah, I mean, Iowa is going to be heavily involved. I mean, I think when you look around, some of the teams are interested. Ohio State's reaching out, Indiana's reaching out, UConn, I've been told, now has had contact with her. She is from the East Coast. Several schools on the West Coast want to get her. USC's in a name or school thrown around. But from what I've been told, she wants to stick around the East Coast or the Midwest. And I think Iowa right now is in a strong spot for her. I think UConn, if they take her seriously, they might be able to. But it's also, what's Lucy Olson want? Does she want to be a generational shot chucker, or is she trying to win? Because if she wants to continue to score the clip she is, she could stay at Villanova. If she wants to make some more NIL money, if she wants to be on national TV, if she wants exposure, I mean, Iowa and UConn are probably two of the top schools in the country when it comes to that. So I don't want to say Iowa's a leader right now, but I do think Iowa is heavily involved. And then I do think there's a realistic chance that Lucy Olson is a Hawkeye next year.
Interesting. Well, we'll follow that. How about some Hawkeyes that are going to play for Fran McCaffrey's? Are the men getting any closer to replenishing their roster, David?
Yeah, I mean, Iowa's certainly right now, I think, keeping the oven warm for some prospects. I know they did just set up a visit this week with the Moorhead State guard, John Rothstein. I believe first reported that about 20, 25 minutes ago. He had one of the highest assist rates in the country. Drew Bellwell, very quick athletic guard, great passer, needs to improve his jump shot a little bit, but he can set up teammates. But Iowa's probably talking to, you know, 5 to 8 heavily as far as I'm aware of. So they are prioritizing a few spots right now. But, you know, it's also what are the priorities of guys going to be? Because I don't know right now with some of these big schools if Iowa can compete on the NIL front when it comes to men's basketball. I just don't think that that's realistic. So Iowa is trying to replenish the roster. I still think there's a long way to go when it comes to it. But with the recruiting dead period coming to an end, I believe tomorrow, there are going to be some visits in the works.
You know, we see, of course, here in the state of Iowa, Iowa State already filling up with a bunch of transfers coming in. What is, I guess, the in comparison to other programs, why is Iowa so slow to react? Is it financial? Is it just the way that Fran likes to do things and making sure that culturally it's the right fit? Why does it seem like Iowa's so much slower than other programs in the portal?
Yeah, you know, I think they are a little bit slower, but I also don't think they're as slow as on the record. I think Iowa tells recruits and tells people that they don't want to, you know, let the national media know that Iowa reaches out to them. And I don't know if that's simply, you know, if that's paranoia. I don't know if that's just the way that Fran McCaffrey and staff operate, but they really like to keep things low key. And I do think that that's a part of it as well. But I do think they are a little bit slower. But, you know, on top of that, too, like we know that Fran is probably as clean as they come when it comes on the recruiting trail. And let's not act like that, you know, basketball recruiting has always been a pristine, clear cut, you know, sort of industry. I mean,
above board
for years. Exactly. Like all ethical, all that. No, never. So, you know, I think Fran McCaffrey does things by the book. I think he stays well within the rules. And, you know, I hate to say it, but at this point, if you're not cheating, you're really not ahead when it comes to college basketball recruiting.
That's not crazy. No. What about some of the former Hawks, Perkins and Patrick McCaffrey? How about those two? Are you hearing anything?
Yeah, so I think Patrick right now is setting up some visits. I believe that there are going to be several high majors involved. I know some other schools have been reaching out to him. I mean, you look at Clemson, I think, has been a school that's been thrown around. Butler's been a school that's been thrown around. But he is going to go high major, and we'll see what he wants to do. I mean, if he wants to go try to make some major NIL money somewhere, I think that there's going to be a market for that for him. And, you know, ultimately, too, when it comes to Patrick, I think he'll have a great year. I think getting out of Iowa, getting a fresh start, I think that's going to be really, really good for him. So I'm intrigued about that. Tony Perkins, we'll see. I think Iowa fans would be very comfortable rooting for Tony Perkins if he goes a couple of different places. I think Missouri right now could be the leader in the clubhouse, which is strange considering they're fresh off an 0-18 season in the SEC. But I do know that Indiana's been also thrown out there. Oregon's been out there. But I'll tell you, it could be a rough, rough go if Tony Perkins comes to back to Carver-Hawkeye Arena and he's not wearing the black and gold.
All right, so one more on basketball. About Peyton Sanford and the fact that he is going through the process of the NBA. A lot of folks, Trent included, say that this is the year that the NBA draft is not deep. Next year, the opportunities may not be there. I mean, they're going to draft 60 players in the two rounds. Peyton Sanford, because this is a bad year, may lead him to staying in as opposed to other years. What are you hearing on that front, David?
Yeah, I mean, I think Trent's exactly right. I think this is the worst draft class that's been in my lifetime. It's just not deep. There's really no pure superstars, and I don't know how much depth that there's going to be. And you talk about Peyton, I think it's going to come down to a couple things. One, what's the feedback going to be for Peyton Sanford? If he returns to Iowa, how can he improve his draft stock? Because there are going to be certain things right now that I don't know how much he can improve on. Talk about short lateral quickness. You know, you talk about athleticism. We know what he can do. But he's also a really dynamic shooter. He could be a guy that comes off the bench, you know, and shoots 8 times in 5 minutes. I mean, that's sort of his game. He's improved as a passer. Rebounding-wise, I think could be a little bit tougher going in the NBA. But I think the NBA style fits Peyton Sanford, especially on the offensive end. But two is, like, can Iowa match NIL to have Peyton Sanford come back? Like, right now, I'm pretty split if he comes back or not. I'm not going to lie. I would be, you know, if you asked me a couple weeks ago, I probably was at 75% chance he comes back. At this point, I still think he comes back. But I think it's a lot closer than 50-50, depending on what the feedback's going to be for him. So I'll certainly be talking to people here the next couple weeks. But Peyton goes in there, hits 85-93, you know, in a 103-point workout. that could definitely help his draft stock. Yep.
Interesting. David Eichel joining us. David, last thing on the football front, got to hear from defensive line, defensive backs earlier in the week. Tomorrow you get some more players, 10:30 and, 20 minutes? You get to film a little practice there. Give us an overview, spring practice, what you're hearing, kind of what the buzz is as they implement the new offense.
Guys, motion. Motion.
All right.
When it comes to the offense, I mean, that was the first thing down every defender's belt. And they said, the way that Iowa's offense is working right now, its goal is to try to trick the eyes and to make the defenses do undisciplined things. And Aaron Graves threw this out there. I knew right when I tweeted it, I was going to get picked up and people were going to go about it. But some of the offensive players believe it's a watered down version of a Kyle Shanahan offense. Okay. I'm not saying it's going to be a 49ers offense. I'm not talking about that. But in terms of these short passes, getting the tight ends involved, getting the wide receivers involved, having run pass options, I do think right now the early indications are that Iowa's having a lot of fun with this offense. The offense is kind of feels quote unquote rejuvenated, I think, more than anything else. And I think that we'll be able to talk to some more players tomorrow. I requested Cade McNamara. I think it'd be really good if Cade McNamara came out and talked, even though he's not a full participant right now. But as far as the defense goes, I think that they're incredibly confident. I mean, they returned so many different starters. John Nestor is the guy to keep an eye on at cornerback. Y.A. Black returns. I think there's a lot of standard and a lot of expectations that Xavier Wampa could take the next step as well. So, you know, it's all good, guys. I mean, when's the last time we've really had a bad thing to say in spring football? Everybody looks faster. True. Everybody's stronger.
Yeah.
Everything's better. I mean, that's kind of the story of it. But I'm in the believe it when I see it mode when it comes to the offense. But, you know, the motion, some of the things that they're talking about, you know, they at least perk my eyebrows up a little bit.
Good stuff. David Eichel, 24/7 Sports, HawkeyeInsider.com. David, anything you'd like to promote before we let you go?
Just stay locked in to HawkeyeInsider.com. We'll have a bunch of spring football content. We have a ton of Iowa women's basketball intel, some, you know, but five-star prospects, transfer portal stuff. I'll tell you what, guys, people might think Iowa's going to be irrelevant after Caitlin Clark. I don't think they're going anywhere. I don't think they're going anywhere. So stay tuned to HawkeyeInsider.com.
Good stuff, David Eichel. Talk to you down the road. Thanks for doing this, David. Appreciate it.
Hey. Yeah, thanks, guys. Have a good week.
Yep, good to talk to you. David Eichel, 24/7 Sports, Hawkeye Insider. So he thinks the program maintains.
Mm-hmm.
What about, we saw the numbers, obviously, 4 million more people watch the women than the men.
Right.
ABC versus TNT had something to do with that Monday night, Sunday afternoon, something to do with that. Realistically, let's put the number at 18 million just to make it easier for two knuckleheads like you and I trying to do math. What kind of drop-off? How many people watch the championship game next year, Sunday afternoon?
Let's say it's a good matchup, too.
Yep, get a good matchup.
Let's say it's UConn, South Carolina.
Okay.
Make it simple.
Sure.
9.
You think it's cut in half? I think it's a little more than
that.
Do you?
Yeah. Would you put the over-under at 10 million?
I was going to go 11.
Okay.
Yeah.
So north of the LSU Iowa championship.
Yep. I think it's grown the game. There's no question.
Yes.
That we've seen the stars, not just in Iowa, the stars all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I read a mock draft and I know the players.
Isn't that
a lot
crazy?
Of them.
Yes.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
9. Okay.
Probably about right in that range, though.
Somewhere in that area.
But for a sport that, at best, was getting $4 million for a championship game, and that becomes your new baseline.
And that's good.
Yes,
that's really good.
Yeah.
That's clear growth.
I'll be watching. We've talked about it different times throughout the course of the season.
Mm-hmm.
There was an NFL Sunday where I had to watch the end of an LSU, and they weren't playing South Carolina. It was somebody else in the SEC. It was an SEC.
Did you have a bet? Of course you did.
No, I didn't.
You didn't?
It was just watching, and it was before one of the playoffs. It was in January.
Wow.
And the beginning of 49ers, somebody I want to say, or maybe it was the Cowboys, whatever it was, I had to stay and watch the end of the LSU women's game.
It was compelling.
That's what it's done.
Yeah.
For now, I've enjoyed the sport longer than you.
Yep.
But I see you. I tell this story to people all the time. When I talk about looking, and it's just a one of one, but the way that you, kicking, screaming, dragging.
Yeah, it was.
And what you turned into the last 15 months.
Yep.
It's astonishing.
I love
it really
stories.
Is.
I mean, we love stories, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is a story like we've never read before. It truly is. I will take a timeout. David Kaplan is going to join us. Are the Bears about to write a story?
Ooh, let's hope it's a good one.
It hasn't been.
I've read a lot of Stephen King novels as it pertains to the Bears.
Cappy on Chicago Sports next, 106.3 KXNO. All right, Miller and Condon, welcome back. Des Moines Sports Station, 106.3 KXNO. You know what the music means. Off to Chicago we shall go. We do it this time each and every Wednesday. Centurion Stone of Iowa, centurionstoneofiowa.com. Sponsors our friend David Kaplan. Cap, Trent, Ken, thanks for coming on, Capper. How are things? Are you there? Going once.
Hey, you there?
Got you now. How are you doing?
But somehow I must have hit the mute button. Everything good?
Yeah, things are good here. Things are really good. Good for the Cubs last night that they won. Boy, that collapse on Monday, Cap. Mm-hmm. I know it happens to a lot of teams. It's 162 games. But, man, you're up 8-0. It's not like you're playing the Dodgers, although the Padres might be okay. But to blow an 8-0 lead, good that they came back last night, Cap.
The other night, I was so mad. First of all, I get up at 4:24 every morning to go to work, but I stayed up. Jeez. And I'm up watching that game, and it's 8-0. And I said, I think we're safe here. I can go to bed. I got to do the recap, but I'm like, I'll just set my alarm. I get some sleep. We met at Wrigley. She's a diehard, but she's the most negative Cubs fan in the world, literally. She says, they could blow this game. I'm like, huh. I'll bet you whatever you want. We're not blowing an 8-0 lead. Guy's rolling. She's like, I'm going to bed. I go, come upstairs. It's 8-2. Now I'm like, all right, what are we doing here? Now it's 8-4. Now it's 8-5. She rolls over. She's like, I told you they're going to blow this game. And, of course, they did. And she was fast asleep. I record my recap. I'm furious. I come into bed, and all of a sudden she wakes up. How many did they lose by? I'm like, how could you tell? She said, 'cause I heard you screaming in your office. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not good.
No, it wasn't.
Bullpen. You know, they could have got Hader, potentially could have built a little bit more. Does that remain still the biggest concern with this squad? There are names that you like. I don't know eventually what Alzolay is going to be on the back end of that bullpen. I think he'd be a hell of an eighth inning piece, but what are your thoughts overall on the bullpen and the need, or the potential need, by the time we get into June, July, for some help in that back end?
It's not a potential need. It's a need right now. You just lost
Merriweather.
Merriweather,
yeah. Yep.
Who, you know, they said, well, at least a month with a stress fracture in a rib. Okay, that means a month for that to heal. But how do you get your arm strength back? That means another 2-3 weeks where you'll be seeing him in Des Moines.
Yep.
Or double A, somewhere is going to see him pitch. So, for me, that's a 2-month injury. You have him. Jose Kwas, I'm sure his mom and dad love him dearly. But they also have to have their love tested because that guy stinks.
Yeah.
I mean, holy cow. So, who do you have that you truly, truly go lockdown guy right there? Do you have one? Hector Neris? He's okay.
Yep.
He's fine. I'm glad he's here. Alzolay, he's okay. He's fine. They don't have one guy in that pen where you go, oh, man, base is loaded, two outs, got to get an out.
Mm-hmm.
That's the guy. They don't have one.
Mm.
So that's my concern, and I hope Jed realizes that sooner rather than later.
Imanaga has been unbelievable, Cap, in both of his starts so far this year. Your thoughts on his start and you know, how much better he can get?
Oh, I mean, I love him. I think he's a really good pitcher. Watched him in spring training and thought, a little too many fly balls for me on a warm summer day. That ball may not land. But his stuff has been so good. You know, he's not throwing 99, but 94, 95, and he can elevate. And then that breaking ball has a lot of depth, a lot of bite to it. So I really like him as a signing. But let's not forget now, you do not have Justin Steele. And he's at least 3 weeks away. You do not have
Tyone.
I hear he's getting closer. Are you ready to bring Cade Horton up? I'm not sure that that's where their mindset is at this point. Ben Brown was really good.
Unreal.
Two outs.
Yep.
He was really good.
Why did they take him out last night, Cap? Help me out with that.
I think that they looked at that game and what was the score at the time? 5-0 already?
Yeah, and it was he got the first two outs, It was a long fly ball, I think, was his final out. So it's not like he had anybody on base.
I think Craig just looked at it and went, I don't like the matchup. I've seen enough. I'm not going to let this kid put two men on base and then have what happens.
Repeat Monday. Before. Yeah, fair point.
Craig has said before, he's not worried about, who did Ken Miller get the win? Mm-hmm. He doesn't care.
Right.
He doesn't care. Yep. So he made the right decision, and it worked out.
Yep.
Two teams in front of them in the Central here a couple weeks in, the Pirates and the Brewers. Of those two teams, who concerns you more?
Pirates or Brewers? Good question. Because the Brewers don't have Burns. Nope. They don't have Woodruff.
Mm-mm.
But they're a good team. They're well managed. That guy's, you know, Craig's trusty assistant, former head coach, I think, at Arizona State, Pat Murphy. That's a good organization, man. I would probably say the Brewers still, they've been there. I don't believe in the Pirates yet.
Yeah, Devin Williams being out, that's a blow.
That's a big blow.
Yeah, absolutely. Pirates will bring up Skeens at some point. Mm-hmm. He's incredible to watch. I'm just glad that the Pirates got off to the start this time last year, Cap. We were all raving about the Pirates, and now they've arrived on the scene, and then they crashed and burned once we turned the calendar to May. We'll see if we do. How do we get the Nico Horner out of his prolonged hitting slump? Because, Cap, watching him play second base, Mike, I know he's a gold glover, but boy, oh boy, he just emphasizes how good he is defensively. Offense is just slow. Is there any concern there?
I don't think so, because he's proven he can hit at this level. But you're right. He certainly is off to a slow start. It doesn't look like he's overmatched. It just looks like he's not locked in yet. So some guys have a tough first month. They can't blame the weather. The weather's been cooperative. Now they're out playing in the West Coast. I would hope he can get this thing turned around, because defensively, he's a star.
Christopher Morel is a star with a bat in his hand. I have to believe the council is going to employ similar tactic, right? You have to have him in the lineup because he can hit a home run, as we saw last night, grand slam. But once we get into the 7th, 8th, and 9th, defensive replacement in all likelihood for Morel, is that how you see council handling him?
I do, until he proves that he can play defense at a reasonably acceptable level. He does not, and he's made it clear, does not like being a DH. He feels he's a better hitter when he is in the lineup and engaged in the game. Frank Thomas, the first ballot Hall of Famer, told me that. Mm-hmm. He said, I hated being a DH. So I think you're going to see him play a lot in the field to try and get him through the growing pains. But if the game's on the line, no shot he's going to be out there.
Cappy, yes, I'm going to ask the White Sox question.
What?
I'm going to pose it this way. You're in Chicago. You have a ton of White Sox fans. How can you talk about this team? What is the conversation like of this just decrepit, awful team?
Wow. on the home of the White Sox, ESPN 1000. Look, I think it's embarrassing, and this is not a Chris Getz thing. I think it's embarrassing that in this market, you have a team that has never spent more than $75 million on a player, which to you, me, and everyone listening, $75 million, that's a fortune. Yeah, it's not a fortune in Major League Baseball when you've got guys making $200 to $700 million. Sox are one of only two teams now that have ever not had a player sign a $100 million or more deal. That's Oakland and the White Sox.
Oh,
Oakland's Oakland. The only other one was Kansas City, and they signed, what's his name?
Bobby Witt Jr.
For $285 million a couple months ago. So the Sox and Oakland are the only two that's never done that, which I think is embarrassing. It shows you the level of commitment to try and win. It's not there. Yeah. It's sad. But we do talk about them, and we talk about, you know, another guy goes down with an injury last night in Yoan Moncada. They've got Robert on the injured list, and now they have Jimenez is knocked out. I mean, this team could be in the 50s for wins.
Billy Donovan, his name is coming up in with Kentucky. I think Scott Drew is probably the favorite, but Billy Donovan is, and his Bulls are in the play-in tournament, which starts next week. He said repeatedly he's been there, done that. He's back-to-back championships in Florida, blah blah blah. Billy Donovan, is there anything to Kentucky, or is he an NBA coach? Period. Going forward, whether it's with the Bulls or not, your thoughts on Donovan back to the college game, and is he even taking that phone call?
Look, he said yesterday to the media there, and I've known Billy since 1992 when he was an assistant coach. Billy said yesterday after practice that he has not spoken or his representatives to Kentucky, and that he is focused on the job he has here. Now, could they get knocked out next Wednesday night by the Atlanta Hawks? And all of a sudden, the next day, he's on a plane to Lexington, I guess. But he's made it clear he's not a college guy anymore. He doesn't like the college game. He doesn't like what's happened to the college game. And so, you know, he once said to me that, he goes, look at the NBA lifestyle versus college. He said, in college, we start school. I got to make sure guys are taking care of their academics. Yep. And they're good citizens. And then we've got all of our workouts, and then we've got our practices, and then we've got our season. And at the same time, I've got to be out recruiting and calling kids and talking to coaches and on the road. He said, and then we go through the whole season. And when the season ends, I'm right back into high school's recruiting. We have very little downtime. He said, in the NBA, once the team gets eliminated, let's assume next Wednesday the season ends. He's got a place in Chicago, and he's got his regular, normal home in Gainesville, Florida. He's going to go back to Florida, and that's where he is, unless he likes to fly around and see his players a bit in the off season because he develops those relationships. Like, he went to Europe to see a player that the Bulls had at one point. That's what he does. But other than that, he's off, man. He goes to the pre-draft camp, or he goes to the summer league a little bit. Other than that, he's off. And, you know, as one coach once said to me, you know, if a guy gets in trouble in a bar fight in college, they don't say, yeah, Mr. Miller, the biology teacher's student, got in a fight last night. No, Coach Miller's player got in trouble. In the NBA, they don't link you to the coach.
No.
They link you either to the organization, or they put it right where it belongs, on the guy who got in trouble. He said it's a totally different world, man.
Bears with the, of course, number one pick. We know Caleb Williams will be the guy at number 9. The Vikings at 11. The Broncos at 12. The Raiders at 13. All of them need quarterbacks. If there is a quarterback on the board, say it's J.J. McCarthy still there, what kind of haul do you anticipate the Bears are going to get, which very well could turn into a bidding war between those three teams?
I would be surprised if they trade out of 9.
Really?
I would. Yep. Now, could it happen? I guess. But I think there's a chance that 4 quarterbacks are gone in the top 5. So if 4 are gone in the top 5, then you still have Marvin Harrison, Rome Odunze, Malik Nabers, Joe Alt, Dallas Turner. You're getting one of those guys. And I think unless the board falls really wacky and there's only 3 quarterbacks gone and none of the guys I just mentioned are still there, then he might trade down. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think he looks and goes, boy, I could get a superstar right there.
David Kaplan, Centurion Stone of Iowa, sponsors them each and every week. Cap, thank you as always. We'll talk to you next Wednesday, Capper.
I look forward to it. We're 15 days from the draft, baby.
It's going to be a blast. Absolutely. Thanks, Cap. Appreciate it. Yep, see ya. Good to talk to you, David Kaplan. Speaking of that draft, Vikings fans tomorrow, 12:15, the voice of the Minnesota Vikings, Paul Allen, will join us. Indiana Fever just put this out. Did you see this tweet or this X?
No.
You don't have to buy the league pass.
Oh, you don't?
No. Every one of their games, the team that finished with the third worst record in the league, are on national TV.
Look at that.
Now, Amazon's one of them.
Okay.
CBS, ABC have games.
Mm-hmm.
ESPN, NBA TV.
Wow.
What's ION?
That was what I was trying to. It wasn't the CW Ion. I think on DirecTV it's like channel like 45 or 39.
What?
Never go there.
Ion?
Absolutely never go there.
Unless you make a mistake with the buttons.
Right. But it's there, I believe. Or at least it used to be.
Every game, they just put it out. Every single game.
All right. Missed out that $35 from Ken Miller.
Yeah. Alea Boston, you're number two. People are digging it, Trent. Or maybe, nah.
No.
I will come back. Finish the hour. It's Des Moines Sports Station, 106.3 KXNO. Condon, welcome back. Final minute of our program. Murph and Andy, top of the hour. Trent's plays of the day. Circus Sports sponsor those. All right, Trent, what are you doing?
Well, baseball is a little light. We have one underway already with the Dodgers and the Twins. I took a shot on the Twins today.
You did.
146, tied up at one as we go to the bottom of the
third. How'd you do yesterday? Had a couple of winners.
3-0.
Nice.
Yeah, stacking them up, and we're going to take the Diamondbacks this afternoon. But it's all about the golf. I bet on six guys to win. I'll just hand those out. We got top fives, top tens, top 20s, all kinds of stuff.
But who are your winners?
Scheffler, I put 2.5 units on it.
Okay.
Plus 480. Xander, little better than 15-1. Hideki, 25-1. Joachim Noah, Neiman, not Noah, 31 to plus 3,100. Shane Lowry, 60-1.
Lowry.
Yes, huh? I got a lot of Shane Lowry involvement this week. Jumped on with you and Sanjay at 120-1. And my long shot, Harris English, 170-1. Also, the great putter, Denny McCarthy, I have in there. He's 100-1. So that is my Rolodex, but there is a whole lot more betting for the Masters and me.
All righty. You can follow him at the Action Network. Following us, Murph and Andy. Following them, The Drive with Heather and Sean. We are, and we're here every Monday through Friday from 11 to 1, Miller and Condon on Des Moines Sports Station. Talk to you tomorrow, 106.3 KXNO.